Yeah, somebody from here texted me this morning asking if I was going to be done by Sustainers. They said it started at 6. I said, I'll be done at 5:59. We're good. Colossians chapter 3. The problem is everybody who knows me doesn't doubt that. That's the only problem with that. Yes, my daughter Elizabeth, she takes after her mother, bless her heart. And we all know how. My wife really wanted to preach. She likes being up here in front of everybody so much. Mr. Ramos always tries to schedule her, but anyway, she told me I'd have to preach it after she got done writing it, so we're good to go. Amen. It's good to be here. I love this church. I love this college. Love the young people. I'm thrown off. I'm expecting to look over here and see the teen boys because for years that's the way it was. So I'm all thrown off. All the teens are over here. I got to know where I'm aiming. I always have to aim at the teen boys. It's just tradition. And just kidding. It's good to see everybody. Anyway, it's good to be here. Appreciate the church. Appreciate these men on staff. Most of them I went to college with. We're all very young. We came when we were 5. And anyway, looking forward to a good week. I hope you're here looking for that as well. Shouldn't be long. I've only got one verse. Colossians chapter 3, verse number 23. Of course, I've taken the last 3 Wednesday nights dealing with 3 verses. So anyway, Colossians 3, verse 23. Bible says, "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord, and not unto men." Let's read that again. If you would, read it aloud with me. Ready? "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men." Let's have a word of prayer and let's take a look at His Word this morning. Father, we're grateful to be here. Lord, I thank You for our guests that are here. Thank You for this church. Thank You for this conference, Lord. This messages and times of this conference have helped me so many times over the years, and I thank You for that. And we come to You expectantly and in faith, asking You to do that yet again this year, to work in our hearts and speak to us through Your Word. Now, Lord, as we're here in chapel and we've got these young people here, I ask, Lord, that You would also do a work in their hearts. And this morning, I pray, as always, I'd be out of Your way. I pray, dear God, that You would be able to use Your Word in our hearts and lives. Just challenge us with the truth. There's nothing new here for anybody. But I pray, God, that You would use Your Word in our lives. I pray that I would be Your vessel. May You get the honor and glory through everything that's said and done. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. In my ministry, the Lord's allowed me to be in a number of places. I'm hoping I get to stay where I'm at for a little while at least. My poor kids lived 3 different states in 3 different years. But anyway, in doing that, I've ministered to all kinds of different folks. Ministered in southern Missouri. I've ministered in Massachusetts. I don't fit in anywhere anymore. In Massachusetts, I was a southerner. Here was a southerner. I plead guilty to the charge, and I like that one. When I was out west in Idaho, I was an easterner, and now I'm in Florida, and nobody there is from there either, so it doesn't really matter. But one thing, I've most of my time has been ministering in rural areas, and rural areas, you got these folks called rednecks. And so in case you've never seen one or are unfamiliar, I thought I'd give you a clue so you could recognize a few of them. You might be a redneck if your belt buckle doubles as a serving platter. Or you consider the 5th grade your senior year. Your home has more miles on it than your car. Your mother has ammo on her Christmas list. Your family tree doesn't have any branches. I love how that just slowly rippled over, and some of you got it a little bit later. Now that you girls are caught up. Just kidding. Don't take that the way I meant it. You might be a redneck if you have more guns than teeth. Or I like this one. You have an Elvis Jell-O mold. Or you've ever had to finance a tattoo. Your lifetime goals don't own a fireworks stand. And your parakeet knows the phrase, open up, police. Might be a redneck if you have more than two brothers named Bubba or Junior. Or you think that taking your wife on a cruise means circling Dairy Queen. Your front porch collapses and more than six dogs are killed. Or you go to a family reunion so you can find Mrs. Wright. Ouch. Oh. And in tough situations, you ask yourself, what would Curly from the Three Stooges do? But the rednecks decided to get revenge. And so they wrote their own about Yankees and Northerners and city folk. And as I read them, though, they called them blue necks. But as I read them, I don't think any of the blue necks are insulted. But you might be a blue neck if you don't even have one can of WD-40 somewhere around the house. You might be a blue neck if the last time you smiled was when you stopped somebody from getting on an on-ramp on the highway. That one's true. Or you don't know anyone with at least two first names. Joe Bob, Faye Ellen, Billy Ray, Mary Jo, Bubba Dean, Joe Dan, or Mary Alice. You might be a blue neck if you get freaked out when people talk to you in public places. You might be a blue neck if you can do your laundry without quarters. This is true. I was in Massachusetts. Somebody invited me over for a barbecue. They never once brought out barbecue sauce. So you might think of barbecue as a verb meaning to cook outside, or that Heinz ketchup is spicy. Now, any good Missourian knows this one. You might be a blue neck if you've never had a moon pie, you never had an RC Cola, and you've never enjoyed an RC Cola with a moon pie. None of you understood that, but brother, you know what I'm talking about, absolutely. And you have no idea what a polecat is. And you've never planned your summer vacation around a gun and knife show. But anyway. Now, true as all that is, being around rednecks, there's a phrase I've often heard that I call the redneck motto. But being in ministry for nearly 25 years now, I find the redneck motto is not just for rednecks. It's a phrase you might have heard. Well, it's good enough for who it's for. Maybe you've never heard that. That tells me you've never been around rednecks. But the idea of the phrase is often used when something you're doing isn't quite as good as it should be, but you're not going to spend any more time doing it. I worked at a Pizza Hut once, and one of the cooks there said that I was a delivery driver and all these other things, but they wanted me to help them with the cooking. And so I'm sitting there, I'm doing that, and I'm asking the guy, the cook, I said, what about that? He goes, you know what? It's good enough for who it's for. And I wanted to look at him like, what does that mean? But he lived by that. And I don't know that anybody necessarily intends it as a harmful phrase, but it got me thinking. It's good enough for who it's for. Begs a question. Who is it for? The verse we just read, and whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, gives us the answer. Who's it for? It's for Christ. You say what? Whatsoever. Everything. So this morning, I don't remember if I gave you the title or not, but I'd like to make the case for excellent Christianity. There's good Christianity, there is Christianity, there's casual Christianity or halfway Christianity, but those are all the opposite of what God has laid out for us in this verse. In this verse, it's very simple. What God wants is excellent Christianity. I look around this world and I see a lot of people that strive for excellence in a lot of things. They strive for excellence in sports. They strive for excellence in academics. They strive for excellence in making money. They strive for excellence in their career. They strive for excellence, but whenever you bring up, listen, this is what you need to do for Christ, they say, but hold on, it's good enough for who it's for. What that tells me is who they believe it's for is themselves. And so therefore, they live what I call casual Christianity. I want to get into this verse and learn some things about what excellent Christianity is. But before, by way of introduction, let me give you five quick enemies of excellent Christianity that I want you to be aware of, because if you allow these in your life, everything else I'm going to preach isn't going to help you. So five quick enemies. The first one's the enemy of indifference. The enemy of indifference. Indifference says it doesn't matter how or if it gets done. I will do it if I have time. I've been in churches where you ask somebody, can you sing a special on such and such Sunday? Well, if I get something ready, I'll be ready. Oh, you'll know. Okay. Was that a yes or a no? Well, if I get it ready, what are they saying? I'll be happy to serve God by singing a special if nothing else stops me from taking time to practice. Total indifference. There's the enemy of indolence. Now, I'm in college. You all should know what that means. But just in case, it had to start with an I, and it means laziness, okay? All right? But basically, it just takes too much work. Preacher, I like to read my Bible every day, but, well, that just takes too much work. I'd like to study this out, but it just takes too much work. I'd like to go soul winning. I'd like to learn how to serve God in some area, but it just takes too much work. There's the enemy of indulgence. I don't have time because I'm so busy with fill in the blank. It all boils down to something called that Paul calls in 2 Timothy the affairs of this life. He said in 2 Timothy 2:4, no man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life. Indulgence says, I'm too busy doing other things. I've got other plans. I've got other goals that I'm aiming for. And what you're asking of me is going to take away from that and require me to actually focus and work at my Christian life. I don't have time for that. I've got other things to indulge in. I've dealt with these last two all too much recently. There's the enemy of immovability. Any pastor knows this one, especially if you've ever taken a church that's been around for a little while. Immovability says, I'm fine with the way things are. I don't see a need to change. And no one can teach me something I don't already know. This isn't hard to find. You can usually find it in the nursery. You want to find somebody who knows everything, ask a 4 or 5 year old. And the age on that just keeps growing. Every year my daughter gets older. But it's true. Unfortunately, I find it in far too many churches. Let me help you out something real quick. Young people, if I could help you out, you're not dead. Wasn't that brilliant? Wasn't that brilliant? So guess what that means? You still have something to learn. And that won't change even if you're 162 in a nursing home. If you're still alive, there's still something you can learn, and God still got you here for a reason. We should never reach, and that's why I say it's the enemy of excellent Christianity, because if you're unteachable, you can never learn how to be a better Christian. And we all need to learn how to be a better Christian. The final one, this one is another one, it's what I call the enemy of indoctrination. It's along the lines of immovability, but it basically says, I've already learned all that I need to know, and I will interpret everything through the lens of my teaching. Be careful who you read and who you listen to. Yes, sir. Just because they've got a TikTok channel, which why in the world you'd want to be on something and give China all your information, I have no idea. But just because they've got a TikTok channel or they've got a YouTube channel doesn't mean that they have a clue. It just means they know how to market. It doesn't mean they have a brain in their head. And doesn't mean, and it definitely does not mean there is a single ounce of spirituality in them or truth that maybe they can lay out for you. Watch out. Be careful. Because I've just dealt with a whole bunch of people that in their 20s were taught a false doctrine and they cannot be moved from it. Someday somebody will want to help you. But you were indoctrinated on something contrary to the scriptures. You young men, Calvinism is a dangerous doctrine that attracts a lot of young men. And what it teaches you is to read the scriptures through a particular doctrinal lens rather than let the scriptures teach you. You teach the scriptures. The one I've dealt with is on the opposite end of the spectrum. It's called hyperdispensationalism. So you have no idea what it is. Neither does hardly anybody else, but some people do. And it teaches you to read all the scriptures through a totally different doctrinal lens. And what it causes people to do is totally discount all of the rest of the Bible except Paul's epistles. It's a goofy and a stupid and ridiculous doctrine. Pardon me if I'm a little bit passionate, but I've been battling it for months. These are all dangerous for excellent Christianity. Now, any one of those five could be you, but I don't want to talk all the time about the enemies of this. Let's talk about what excellent Christianity actually means. And we have it listed for us here. I'd like you to note, first of all, the parameters of excellent Christianity. He lays it out in the first four words here of Colossians 3, verse 23. He says, "And whatsoever ye do." I want you to note that excellent Christianity doing, and let's go back for a second. What am I talking about with Christianity? I'm talking about everything in your life. I'm talking about how you serve, but I'm also talking about how you live. I'm talking about who you are. I'm talking about your dedication to God. I'm talking about your dedication to go out and tell people about Jesus, to go soul winning. I'm talking about your dedication to saying no to the things of this world and the things that the flesh comes up and tries to get you on and the temptations that the devil will bring to try to destroy you. I'm talking about whether or not you're going to get pulled aside by the affairs of this life, by friends, by movies, by influencers, by social media, by internet, or whatever it may be, or simply fact that you just don't want to be all serious about God. Listen, I'm telling you, if you got saved, you were born again into a new family, you have a new purpose, and it's time for you to learn to turn your eyes on this world. You're a pilgrim here. You're a stranger. You're just passing through. And your Christianity is not supposed to be only what happens at Bible college, only what happens in the Christian school, only what happens when you're at church. You guys are going to go home. You've been here in Bible college. This is kind of the wrong time to preach this message. It's on the end of it. But let me just ask you a question. Do you have a clue anything that you just learned, or did you just learn it for a test? Because what you learned in Bible college was supposed to be for life. And it'll help you. Several months back, I was going back and studying for something, and I was reading this book on something, and I'm like, man, that's a really good point. Man, I wonder why I didn't learn that in Bible college. Just hang on. So then I went back, and I was going through the books we have for systematic theology by Robert Sargent. I don't know if you still use those or not, but the Bible Doctrines book, and I'm going through, and I see the exact same point that I'd read in that book that I thought was so wonderful and so amazing. And guess what? I had highlighted it to study it for a test. Now, 20 years later, I'd forgotten it because I didn't review what I was learning. I know a lot of preachers come through here. I sat through. It often became a joke. I was sitting in there in Bible college, and every preacher came through, and they said, you know what? All the things I learned that helped me in Bible college, I didn't learn one of them in the classroom. And no offense to any preacher who may have said that. But we all always sat there and looked at each other and like, why are we here? I'm going to tell you, I don't find that to be true. I learned a lot of things in the ministries in the church here. I praise God for that. But I learned a lot of things in the teaching. And I'm not saying anything about, but things have transitioned and a lot of things here. And I'll tell you something, the quality of the education you're getting, I believe, is even better than some teachers that I had. Because you don't want to know where those teachers are. You're getting a good, sound education, but it's not going to help if you don't take it and use it in life. When I was a youth pastor here, we had a thing called DYF night. Pastor Mitchell, you helped with some of those. Those were fun. And it was Defend Your Faith. And we had all kinds of different things going on. But basically, it was a youth group against all these college professors. It was great. It was so much fun. But I had all these questions that they had to answer the truth on. And they had to present the truth to the DIJ, the Department of Impartial Judges. And then the Council of False Advocates, men like Pastor Mitchell. They were presenting the false side of things. And then the judges had to decide who presented the better case. And I don't know how much all the teens got out of it. I felt it was helpful. But I do know one. When she got out of high school, she went to work. And she came home, and her mom asked her and said, "What was work like?" She said, "Mom, it was DYF night every night." She said, "All of the questions that Pastor Parrish told us to study for, I've been asked every single one of them." I didn't even know she was paying attention, so I was glad that she actually learned something from that. My point is this. I think somebody said yesterday, there's no shut-off time for your Christianity. So what part of it is supposed to be excellent and what part is not? Well, the answer is right there, whatsoever. It's all-inclusive. I'd like you to note also, it's personal. He said, "And whatsoever ye do." That "ye" is in the plural, was written to the church at Colossae, so he's talking to all the Christians there. It would be our version, the southern version would be y'all, but it would be our version of you all. But the bottom line is, he's saying, this is everybody, but it's personal for you. Whatsoever ye do, and then I want you to note it's also a responsibility, because you have the word "do." That means you're going to have to actually do something. To be a good Christian, you're going to have to do something. Sometimes I think we can just sit there and just all of a sudden, magically, we're going to become a good Christian. Now, there's two aspects of it. You've got to understand this. I've been teaching on Joseph in our Sunday school, and I've been telling our folks, I said, when it comes to character, you have to understand there are two aspects to character. One is the aspect that God is working to develop the character in you. And the second is you learning the lessons God's trying to teach you by responding correctly. If you study Joseph's life, you'll find that God was developing character in him. At the same time, Joseph showed great character by responding correctly to every situation. The truth is the same for you in every aspect of your Christian life. Yes, God is working in you to change you and to develop you. It's a transformation from within. That's why he said, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." But then he says, "That ye may prove what's acceptable, the acceptable and perfect will of God." You've got to do something. So whatsoever you do, it's all tasks that you are given by others, all tasks that are given by God, all tasks and goals that are taken on by self. The parameters of excellent Christianity is whatsoever ye do. And then let me give you four quick principles also found in this verse. He says, "Whatsoever ye do," and then I want you to notice the next two words. Do it. I wonder if Nike read the Bible. Somehow I doubt it. Do it. First principle, principle of follow through. Principle of follow through. You young people right over here on the side, in teens. You're learning, probably not from your peers. You learn too much from your peers usually, but you're learning from your teachers and preachers and parents. They're investing in you the kind of Christian you need to be. Are you hearing only, or are you doing? College student, you paid a decent amount of money, or somebody did, for you to come for the last year to Bible college to learn. Now you got to step out of here. What are you going to do with it? Next week, some of you are going to graduate. You're going to go into your ministries. Maybe that God's called you to. Maybe you're going to go back home and serve in your church. What are you going to do? Well, man, at Fairhaven, man, I was on the bus. Man, I was in Sunday school. Man, I was in nursing home. I was going out soul winning. You get home to your home church. What are you going to do? Well, I'm home. I didn't do all this before I went to Bible college. Why do I got to do it now? Well, why'd you go to Bible college if it wasn't to change you? What are you going to do? You've been given a lot. Folks have invested in you. It wasn't for no reason. It was for you to go and serve God. What rejoices the heart of everyone here is when people come here and they graduate, or maybe they just come for a year or two and they go back so they can serve in their home church, and they come out, Brother Ramus comes by and he visits with them and says, man, I got graduates and people who went to Bible college, they're serving God in their churches all over the place. Listen, that's what it's supposed to be about. Follow through. Whatsoever you do, do it. Live for God. Serve God. Follow through. You got to work to keep the Christian life. How many times does God say, watch, be sober, be vigilant? Why does he say that over and over? Well, in one verse he tells us, because your adversary, he's your enemy, the devil, walketh about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He wants to destroy you. And I, for one, am sick and tired of losing people to him. But he doesn't have to win a Christian. He only wins the Christian because the Christian chooses to let him win. Why? Because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Because I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Or because, nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. Follow through. You're going to have to put some energy in it. You have to put some time into your Christian life. This means there should be some times when you get alone with God and you say, God, where am I at? You can do it how you like. For me, it helps me. I get alone. I've got a clipboard and a paper and a pen and God. And I just say, okay, Lord, where am I at? Sometimes I'll start, I'll make a list. Okay, I'll say my marriage, my family, my ministry. Sometimes I'll break down the ministries a little bit better. My devotional life, my soul winning, whatever. I'll just list it all out. And then I'll take each one of those headings and I'll say, okay, God, what do I need to work on in this area? I'll let him show me in each of those areas, and then I go, and then I say, okay, now how am I going to follow through on what God has just shown me? What can I do about this? And then I try to get at that, and about 3 or 4 months later, I come back and see how miserable and pitiful I am and how much I failed, and I start all over again and go forward. But there's no other way to go forward until you at least at some point take stock of your life and say, how can I do more? About 10 months, I came here trying to figure out where I was going to go. And that's why I never tell these illustrations. Back porch of where your pastor's house is now, I got to stay there for a little while. And I was back on that back porch 8 or 9 hours a day. Just reading my Bible, reading books, saying, Lord, what do I need to do? And God changed my life right there. Walking that lake. It actually can be beneficial, college students, believe it or not. One time, I think I walked it 10 times in a row, and I didn't even notice. I was just praying. I must have been out there a couple hours just circling. Finally, it got dark, and I went in. But I was just battling with God, and God saying to me, yeah, you got to fix this. 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 Got about a year down in the ministry down there, and I went back over some notes that I had taken. I said, well, I was doing good on that for a while, but I got to pick back up on some of these things. You got to do it. You've got to follow through. Secondly, there's a principle of force. He said, whatsoever you do, do it heartily. This word heartily carries with it the idea of from the heart or with all the heart. It also carries with it the idea of sincerity, being real, doing it with zeal, actively, vigorously. This means everything that you have to do, you're putting your heart into it, and it's not for show. It's not just because somebody around you might disapprove and you want to keep them happy. It's you walking around every day understanding that Jesus is with me right here at this moment and he sees how I'm going to do this. Heartily. This means you must do your best. This means you must put effort into what you're doing. This means you put zeal into it. We got a lot of morons in this country. They're putting zeal into the stupidest things. That's right. Climate change. Duh. The very definition of climate is change. How stupid can you get? You don't understand, it's getting warmer. Yeah, it does that. Where have you been? Time you left your lab, where they've been working on you. From the river to the sea. Do you know what that means? Yes, it means they paid me to say that. 9 times out of 10, all those protesters and nut jobs you see on there, they're all just getting paid, bust in. You go back and trace it, incidentally, they're paid by the same people that paid Antifa 4 years ago. Why is it going on? There's an election year. It's not hard to figure this stuff out. But man, they get passionate. Ah, yeah. Saw a video one time of a guy, he got out there with a microphone. He says, can any of you tell me why you are here? There must have been 300 or 400 people there. After a while of him yelling that, they all just got quiet and listened to him. They were passionate about what they were doing. They had no idea they were making money. Somebody, please tell them I said hello. But it was, people get zealous about so many things. Some people are sports people. I stopped considering being a sportsman. The minute somebody kneeled for my flag, I'm done with them. They need none of my money and they need none of my attention. You paid attention to them, that's your prerogative. That was a nicer word. I was going somewhere with that. People get out there freezing cold. Shirt off, painted one color on one side and one color on the other, going, because some fat guy ran with a pigskin. Look at the irony of that one. Can you go to church on Sunday morning? Oh, I don't feel good. Can you get excited? But why are those preachers always yelling amen? They get so excited in church. Singing. You couldn't have picked all the thrills of my soul. That's one of my every empowered youth, I put that right before my message. I love that song. That's why you're in trouble. That's why I'm going long here. But anyway, man. But sometimes people, they don't understand why Christians get excited. Because their zeal is dedicated to something else. Excellent Christianity puts force into it, puts zeal, puts excitement. And then the principle of focus, he said, and whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. If you're living the Christian life and you're trying to serve God, there will be times when you wonder why you're even bothering. You're going to look at the people you're ministering to and you're going to go, they don't even care. They don't even want me here. They don't want to listen. They can't show up for church. There's times, hopefully you don't have to experience this, but I have, when you stare out the door and wonder if anybody's actually going to show up to church tonight. 7 o'clock is when it starts. It's 7:03, and nobody has come.
You go, why am I doing this? I'll tell you the reason. For him. My family was still there. I have it on good authority. I didn't preach any shorter to them than I do any other time. God said, you got three kids and a wife. They need the... No. He said, you just keep going. There are times, I don't know. I used to love the fight. Sometimes I get weary in it these days. But I'll tell you, it doesn't matter. You're doing it for God. But I'm just being honest with you. Sometimes you get down. Sometimes you get a little bit discouraged. Sometimes you're going to wonder why you're doing it. Or you do it, and even somebody with good intentions, a good person in authority, looks at it and goes, did you really do your best on this? And deep down, you actually did try. Now, don't just take what I just said as an excuse for you to never try. And like, you know what, Pastor Perry said, I don't need to care what the authority said. That's not what I said. But there are times when you do your very best, and as authority, we just don't quite catch that. Sometimes we might say something that didn't mean it critical, but sometimes it comes across, and you're just going, you know what? I did it, and so didn't do it. Or sometimes along the way, you're going to be serving God, and people that you respected and you looked up, you're going to watch them fall, and you're going to look at yourself and say, well, if they can't stay on the course, how in the world am I supposed to? It's very simple. You need to remember. You've got to focus. Remember why you're doing it. You're not doing it for men. And that's why he gives you the third principle there, the principle of, or the fourth one, the principle of forgetfulness. He said, as to the Lord and not unto men. So putting all that together, let me just put it this way. Everything that you do, you need to see Christ as your motivation. You say, well, I'm just cleaning a bathroom. Well, do you want Jesus to come in and see that mess? Or are you going to clean it up? You're like, well, it was a long day on bus, and I'm just really, really tired, and I know I'm supposed to sweep the bus, but I think I'll just pick up some of the big stuff, and nobody will notice if I actually swept the bus. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but God's there, and he saw you, and he sees it. Why are you doing it? Are you doing it for God, or are you doing it for your bus captain? See, when rubber meets the road on a lot of this, you know what you're going to find out? At least I find out myself. You know how it's just all too often I find that I'm doing things for people and I didn't even realize I was. I get so hurt by their disappointment. And I forget that all that really mattered was, is God happy with what's going on? Because here's what I know. One day in eternity, when I stand before the judgment seat of Christ, it'll be me and God. Nobody else. And I sit there and say, but God, you don't understand. I stopped because they were disappointed in me. I stopped because my friends weren't doing it. It seemed like I was a fanatic and nobody else was excited about doing things for God. And God's going to say, I don't care. Never was about your friends. It was about you and me. You must see Christ as your overseer. You must see Christ as your inspector. And don't let the fickleness of men distract you. I can preach a message and one man get up and say, oh, that was just fantastic, Pastor, man, I just love that. And then I can preach another message that night and go, you know what, I didn't care for that. Like, wait a minute, you just told me what a great preacher I was this morning and now you don't think so. We got people who left our church in the last 4 months and they've told me for months how what a great preacher I was. There was no other good preacher in the whole area. And now they're not even coming to church. And one of them texted me Sunday morning and told me I need to go back selling pizza. No lie. So what? Just because you're old and backslidden doesn't mean I have to be. I do it for God. Doing it for God. Now, I've been a little more open and transparent than I planned this morning. But I want you young people to understand, because I think you believe sometimes, I did, when you get out and you're serving God, everything's going to go perfect, and as long as everything's going perfect, I'll serve God. But when the difficulties come, I don't have to keep giving it my best. You give it your best when it's hard. You give it your best when it's easy. You give it your best when people are watching. and you give it your best when people are not watching. Because the one thing you know is that God is always with you and God is always watching. But there's also a purpose to this. In verse 24 and 25, he finishes this out and he says, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done. And there is no respect of persons. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men. Why? Because Christ stands ready to hand out the reward for everything that you're doing. That's why it's so much fun when we sing, it will be worth it all. Pastor Mitchell's a pastor now. I have to sing at least one sermon. When we see Jesus, won't it? That's who we're doing it for. Trophies are in heaven. They're made of real gold, not American dollars. That means they always keep their value. And it's eternal, where moth and rust doth not corrupt, where Congress does not break through, no, thieves, do not break through nor steal. It's solid. But the promise is also there that he that doeth wrong will receive for the wrong they've done. But I'm a preacher's kid. There's no respect of persons. But I'm a bus kid. There's no respect of persons. But I went to Bible college. No respect of persons. But I went to Christian school. No respect of persons. But I didn't always go to Christian school. No respect of persons. But I'm a man. No respect of persons. But I'm a girl. No respect of persons. And those are the only two that God's going to address. There's no respect of persons. You're all going to stand before God. So let me close by saying it this way. God is not interested in casual Christianity. I've tried to focus on how to live excellent Christianity. Here's why. Because I believe this to be true. In all years of ministry that I've served so far, and I'm not that old, younger every day, I find this to be true. Casual Christianity will lead to carnal Christianity, which becomes corrupt Christianity. And it'll result in a contradiction to Christianity. One day somebody will knock on your door and you're going to say, I went to Bible college. I used to go to church. I can quote more scriptures than you even know. Where are you going to church now? I don't go to church. Where are you serving now? Oh, I said I used to. I don't need it anymore. A lot of our ministry with adults gets spent over here rescuing people from a whole history of mistakes they've made through their life. My favorite ministry is preventative, where I say, let's stop it at the source before it ends up over there. Mississippi River, I grew up in Missouri, you're right next to it. Mississippi River is huge. I've never been there, but I'm told way up north at the source, it's so small that you can step across it. Ruined Christianity, ruined lives of Christians, somewhere along the line started with something in their life that they were just casual about God. wasn't that big a deal. What if, when Jesus went to the cross, he had begun negotiating? I'll take the whip, but not the nails. I'll take the whole experience of the crucifixion, but not the separation from the Father, not all the sin placed on me. Got the privilege right before Easter to participate in something that I'd never seen. It was fun, but 7 independent Baptist preachers got together. Well, what was really exciting is we all preached less than 20 minutes. None of our congregations thought we could do it. But each preacher had 20 minutes to preach on one saying from the cross. There was no interruption, except in between every preacher was a song, a hymn. For 2.5 hours, all you did was sit there and think about the crucifixion. When I got done with that, I came away, and it made the resurrection so much more exciting on Sunday. But I came away from that thinking he didn't hold back anything. He gave everything. From the cross and the worst of pain, he pulled himself up to get enough breath to say, "Father, forgive them." To say, "Today shalt thou be with me in paradise." To say, "Woman, behold thy son, and son, behold thy mother." And then he said, "It is finished. Into thy hands I commit my spirit." He didn't say, "God, I've got to stop halfway through here." When he went to that cross, he gave it all. What will be said of you? Let's all stand. Our heads are bowed and our eyes are closed.